name a few examples. But I think that the reduction in spoken word requirement overall might open the door to future managements that are less knowledgeable about these kinds of programming and may put emphasis only on DJing. That's something that you see a lot in campus radio, for example, in the United States.
I would understand that there would be discussion on the commission about the future of the sector. And I think that the main positive from the decision from the policy is that we have been told that we have the ability and that we should have the ability to reflect what communities want. The changes to the spoken word requirements have really been to strengthen the amount of local programming that we're doing. We're being looked to as the local media source.
Looking to take your career to the next level? Then get ready. Here comes Dr. Career on CITR, 101.9 FM in Vancouver, or online at citr.ca. He will inform, inspire, and give you practical steps to successfully land your next dream job.
Welcome back to Career Fast Track, everyone. It's good to have you with us. I'm your host, Philippe Desrochers, also known as Dr. Career. Of course, if you're not following us, you can see our company website at drcareer.com. Last week, we talked about the one-day dream job challenge, which we are going to be launching on September 9th, and I will be continuing to explain to you how to actually do or apply the challenge in your life next week, because this week I've decided to interrupt the regular programming for a special guest. I have Bill Duise with us today, the author of Go To Play Every Day and Call It Work. When I saw the title, I said, I think there's a lot to learn from it, and I'm going to be interviewing him. He's on the air. So, Bill, nice to see you.
Like you're way in a tunnel.
Well, Bill, listen, I just got you in there. I just brought you right in there. Repeat what you just said.
I can hear you better now.
There you go. There you're like a tunnel.
You were definitely in a tunnel there.
There we go. We're no longer in the tunnel, so it's nice to have you. So Bill is the author of Go To Play Every Day, Call It Work. Why'd you write it? And who's it for?
I wrote it for other people so they don't have to go through what I went through. I wrote it as a passion. I actually wrote it for 8 years. And never thought I would ever publish it. And finally, my coach got me to think about publishing it, and I did. And the purpose of it is to help other people realize that within them, they have control, a way to take control of their life, so they can also find those positions where they get to go to play every day and call it work because they do what they love and love what they do.
Sometimes
they're so bloody good at it. They produce great results, and of course, they're going to attract great rewards.
Bill, is it possible to actually? I mean, sometimes I find it's a bit hokey to say that you can actually, you know, the dream job concept, or to have work be like play. Is that actually possible? Have you seen other people achieve that or realize that?
Well, I've done it twice. I'm doing it now. The last 9 years, I did it for 15 years between the ages of 23 to whatever to 39, give or take. And we've helped over 1,000 other people do the same thing. So the answer is absolutely.
Okay, so there's evidence there.
It's pure evidence. It's slam dunk, clear evidence it works.
Now, you say 96% success rate in your book. That is astronomically high. How are you so confident in saying that number?
Well, we rate ourselves on our coaching process. The reason you hire a coach is to accomplish your coachable goals. It's an end result game. You're going to score. And the only reason we set up our business, the Coach Connection, is to make sure our clients actually would score. So we do everything so they would succeed. And so the two things, there's a couple things we do to make sure, a lot of things we do to make sure it happens. But the key part is we make sure every one of our clients actually has a coachable goal before we start coaching them. If they don't have one, we say, don't spend your money with us, you're wasting it. And at the end, we value ourselves by virtue of how well our coaching helped them succeed. And so we ask our clients, did you or did you not achieve at least your initial coachable goal with us? All they have to say is yes or no. There's no pressure. They do it in writing. They don't even have to say it. And the answer is we got a 96% yes.
You know, the interesting thing about a coach is, you mentioned this in your book, and I'd like you to just talk about it a bit. You reveal things about yourself that not only do others not know, but you don't even know yourself. How is that possible through a coach?
Well, the greatest mystery in the world is ourselves. People don't know themselves. The coaching process was designed specifically by Thomas Leonard because he wanted to find out all about himself and could not do it by using any other method, anything. And a coach's total job is to help a person reveal themselves to themselves. And it's based on physics. It really is. Because the physics of coaching is very simple. Think about this. You can see your, every human being cannot see their face. You can't see your face because of where your eyes are. They're looking out. So how do you see your face? You look in a mirror. But what's a mirror? It's a real-time reflection of an outside view looking back at you, right? So when you look in the mirror, what do you see? You see the truth. There it is. If you have ketchup on your nose, you're going to see it. If your haircut's not right, you're going to see it. Your mirror doesn't say, hey, Philippe, listen, Bob, we got you. No one's watching. Listen, I hope you didn't pay for that haircut because you really got scalped. The mirror doesn't say a word. It provides you a clear picture of the truth. Well, each person has the five core ingredients that make up who they are, that drive them, with limit them. And these five core ingredients, as we've talked about, are your passions, your self-imposed obstacles, your beliefs and values. Some people call spirituality. It can be your boundaries, your talents, and your true priorities. These are the five things that govern everybody on the face of the earth. But the thing is, we don't know what they are, because we have the same issue with the eyes looking out. Because your coach comes along and says, all I'm going to do as your coach is ask you questions to dig in, to find out what those five ingredients are. You're going to tell me, and I'm going to turn around and reflect them back to you just like a mirror. As a coach would say, I hear you say that you like to do this, but you don't like to do that. It's happened to me many times, and it happens all the time. And that way, once a person discovers those five ingredients, what really makes them tick, then they are in control of their life. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. You know, if you're just joining us now, we're listening to Bill DeWeese. He's the author of Go to Play Every Day and Call It Work. So he wrote this book. I read the book, and very interesting. It talked about the major benefits of having a coach in your life, and included in that are the five core ingredients. One of them you mentioned were self-imposed obstacles. I'd like to talk more about that. From your personal experiences or the experiences of the people that you quote in your book, you have a lot of success stories. Can you tell me, answer two questions, because I'm dying to know the answer. Why do we create obstacles for ourselves? Because they don't obviously help us. And how do we get rid of them?
Well, I can tell you a really funny story about me and two of them, about me and my self-imposed obstacles. We don't create the self-imposed obstacles. They occur. And what these really are the things we just flat don't like to do. Why do we don't like to do them? It doesn't matter. We just don't. But unfortunately, we don't know we don't like to do them. And I'll give you a case in point that happened with my coaching. I started this business, and one of the things I like to do is write the checks out to my coaches to show them that they've been paid, the clients are happy, the coach is happy, I'm happy. It's a win-win-win situation. So it takes about all of, 12 seconds to write the check and post it in my file.
Right.
And then I would have to put the check in an envelope, and that would take me 5 to 7 minutes. And after that, I would get all uptight. And if I had to do five a day, that would be 30, 40 minutes. So to do that whole project would take 30, 40 minutes to write 6 checks, put them in envelopes, address them, put stamps on them. And I would be all ripped up by the end of the day. My coach observed this and says, Bill, I see you don't like to fill out envelopes. It really disturbs you. And I was unaware of it. I was fighting through it so hard that I had to do it. When he made me realize I don't like to fill out envelopes, then immediately I took control. I made a point that I would not fill out any more envelopes. And today when I write 12 checks, somebody else does the envelopes for me. It saves me an hour worth of hassle. Somebody else can do it in 15, 20 seconds, everybody's happy. So why is it I don't like to fill out envelopes? I don't know.
That's a good point.
I don't care. But the point is, I don't. And another funny thing is I live in Florida. We have grass. It grows all the time. Matter of fact, if I can open the door, you can hear it. Just a second. That's grass growing at 9 o'clock at night here in South Florida. And I live on a property. We have a half acre of grass. I hate cutting the grass. I've never cut a blade in this property. I've been here for 22 years. That's a self-imposed obstacle. That's something I don't like to do. And because I know it, I accept it, I don't fight it, therefore I don't try to force myself to do something I don't want to do. But you say you can't go through life and avoid everything. No, you can't. So when you discover things that you don't like to do but you really have to do, you figure out a way to do it in such a way it causes the greatest or the least amount of pain and suffering. For example, I despise dealing with the IRS. Oh, boy. But I can't avoid it because I have to pay them all the time. So I find a way to do it with the least amount of contact with them. I get the job done, but I don't stretch it out. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
And we all have so many of these, like filling out envelopes, that you would think, how could that ever affect the productivity and the happiness of someone running a business? Well, it did. It does. And as an example, I started this business to provide the best coaching in the English-speaking world for anybody who wants to hire a coach, to surround myself with the best coaches. But when my coach helped me set up this business, we found there's 46 things I didn't want to do, 46 self-imposed obstacles. At that time, we did not know about the envelopes. And one of them was, guess what? I didn't want to coach. So I set up a coaching business, the best coaching business around, and I don't do 1 second of coaching. Because I knew that was something I didn't want to do. So I created the condition so I wouldn't have to.
What's interesting about this, Bill, is that if you're not doing things that are self-imposed obstacles, that leaves you or frees up time for you to do the things that you actually enjoy doing. So there's a huge impact of doing that, isn't there?
You are on target. I will let you continue.
That brings us a pleasure. Yeah, that brings us to actually one of the areas around passions. And I love the story in your book around Linda, the money collector. I'll let you say the story. Can you just share it with our listeners?
Oh, go ahead. You got it. No, go ahead.
All right. So Linda calls up this job. She has this job interview. And in the job interview, the employer is interviewing her for another job. Anyway, that was the impression I got from the story. And during the meeting, it came out that Linda actually loved, I couldn't believe this, she loved collecting outstanding money. So they're called collection agencies where they actually call up somebody and says, you're not paying your bills, you got to call us. It's very stressful. In fact, I used to work in an environment like that. And the smoking levels, everyone looked terrible, gaunt, white. They're just unhappy people. And yet this woman, Linda, loved her work or loved to collect money so much. I don't know if the woman invented a job for her, but made her the manager for collections.
Well, can I finish the story?
Yeah, go on.
It was I doing the hiring.
Where is it? Oh, okay.
I interviewed her for a customer service job and an accounting job. But in my interview, I always ask people, tell me what you really would like to do. And she, by the way, she was from Toronto, Canadian woman, just a wonderful human being. Oh, I can't tell you. But anyway, it's so gracious, so kind. You would never guess. And she said, you know what? I just love being able to collect money from people who really haven't paid it. I looked at her. I said, are you serious? She said, yeah. I said, well, how would you do that? And she then, her eyes lit up, her body straightened up, her back got strong, and she said, this is what I would do. And for the next 10 minutes, she told me how she would do it and this and that and the other. And so finally I go, wow. And I hired her to do just that. Our receivables were terrible. We had an office products company. We sold office products all over the United States and Canada. And our terms were 30 days. Our average time was 48 days and had $250,000 outstanding. It took her 3 months to drop it down from 48 days to 31 days average. Remember, our terms were 30. And to bring in $250,000 cash that hadn't been paid. And she never raised her voice. She never insulted anybody. She never said a bad word. But she had a system that she did it through firmness and kindness. She was awesome.
Bill, I want to...
I want to keep
talking about her, but I do have to take a break now. But after the break, Bill, I want to ask you, how does someone like this woman, Linda, come to be passionate about collecting money? That's one question. And I want to then revert it over to our audience. How does someone in the audience help themselves identify what they're passionate about? So we're talking here with Bill Deweese. He's the author of Go To Play Every Day and Call It Work. I like the concept, and I hope you will as well. You're listening to Career Fast Track 101.9 FM in Vancouver or online at citr.ca. Don't go anywhere. More with our interview with Bill. Back in a second.
CITR has more friends than ever before. We've partnered with tons of local businesses to bring you great discounts in the communities where you live, work, and play. Maybe Main Street is your main drag. Present your Friends of CITR card at Red Cat Records, Lucky's Comics, Devil May Wear, Thriller, Blim, The Kiss Store, The Wallflower Modern Diner, RX Comics, Antisocial Skateboard Shop, Vinyl Records, Regional Assembly of Text, and Twig and Hottie to receive fabulous discounts. So become a CITR member, get a free friends card, and feel the love.
Looking to take your career to the next level? Then get ready. Here comes Dr. Career on CITR. 101.9 FM in Vancouver or online at citr.ca. He will inform, inspire, and give you practical steps to successfully land your next dream job.
And welcome back to Career Fast Track. I'm your host here. We're interviewing with Bill Deweese. He's the author of Go To Play Every Day and Call It Work. Prior to the break, we were talking about Linda, and Linda's this woman that loves collecting money. My first question is, how does a person come to love collecting money, or do we care? We just have to follow our passion. Sorry about that, Bill. You're back on? Bill? Gotta be kidding. Bill?
Hi there. We got hung up on.
That's okay. Sorry about that. Bill, it's a question was for you. We were talking about Linda, and Linda's a passionate about collecting money. My question for you is, how does someone become passionate about collecting money, or should they care? So the question is, as a listener is listening to you, I want them to start thinking how they too can tap into liking something that is so unique and maybe even odd.
Well, in fact, I don't know why she was passionate, neither did she. And it didn't really matter. Because the fact was, she didn't even know how passionate it was until she started telling me. The key, though, is we both figured it out. And what I did was, all I did was is create a job for her where she got to do what she loved to do. And you know what? She came in and thanked me a month after she had been there, where she was doing all this stuff and bringing all this money, and said, I can't tell you how grateful I am because I'm just loving what I'm doing. And I said, Linda, you're grateful. You just made me $200,000. I think I'm pretty grateful, too.
Well, you know, I love this idea, and that this comes to this term you use in the book called the ideal income position, which is where you can actually, the impression I got was that you can actually invent the kind of job you want. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Did it several times myself, and we've helped many people do it. That's the whole key. Because today, the people that use the work selection process, we all use a work selection process. We have some process we go through to pick where we're going to work. Work selection process. But we don't know we use one. And the one we use, we all use it, is called the trial and error method. Emphasis on error. Mm. Which means we look at whatever work positions, jobs available to us at the time, whatever's in front of us. And we pick one using whatever method we want to use. It doesn't matter. And we pick it, and then we go work there, and then we adjust. We adjust to the job. We adjust to the to the business, we adjust to the bosses, we adjust to the company, we adjust to the industry, we adjust to the customers, we adjust. And after all this adjusting over a period of time, we go, wait a minute, I don't like what I'm doing, don't even know what I'm doing. I better get another job. So I'm going to go find something else I really like, and we use the same trial and error method to do it again. And we end up, after a period of time, in the same position, the same feeling of dissatisfaction, but the scenery has changed. We have different company we're working for, different coworkers, whatever. Mm. And it goes on and on and on. The coaching process is a very new process, which is the exact opposite of the trial and error method. Mm. We say, don't even start about considering where you're going to go to work. Let's design it from the beginning. Let's design exactly what is perfect for you. But to do so, though, we have to discover who you are. We have to discover, so you can discover yourself, what your passions are, what your self-imposed obstacles
now,
are.
Bill, I want to ask you, if let's say Linda had walked into your office, you were hiring for a customer service role, and she said, you know, I know you're hiring for a customer service role, but I actually love collecting money. Are there any opportunities in that? Is that something she could have done?
With me?
Yes.
I would say, sit down.
Yeah. Can others do this with other people, or is there a
Absolutely.
Strategy?
Absolutely.
Okay.
In fact, that's what real managers want to hear. Mm. And by the way, it was funny, in real life, she couldn't stand customer service. She says, I couldn't sell or send an order out for anybody. Please make sure I never have to do that. I said, don't you worry.
Interesting. So
the key, she knew herself, and we were able to tailor make the position to suit her. It was a win-win situation.
So I think the audience would be really interested to hear maybe a few tips or strategies or something that, like a takeaway around something they can do. So I understand step one is to identify what it is they want. But once they've understood what they want, let's say somebody out there wants to work for an architectural company as an assistant to an architect, for example. They know they want that. How can they go about inventing that opportunity?
Well, the first thing is find out all the architects within the range of where they want to live. Mm. And they go straight to them and says, I want to work for you as an assistant to do the following things because this is what I love to do and this is what I'm really good at. You don't have to train me, and that way you can go out and be the best architect in the world, and I'm going to take care of your backside. And if the first architect says, I'm not real sure, leave. But the smart architect will say, sit down, we need to talk.
That's true.
That's exactly what happened to Lisa in New York City when she found out that she was 25, a secretary, didn't graduate from college, been 25 years as a secretary. I want to do something. She figured out she wanted to become they call it a grip, but a support person to create, produce live TV shows. Why she came up with that, who knows? But that's what she wanted, okay? So she and her coach go, okay, where do we do this? Well, in New York City, there were only 4 live TV shows produced in New York City. One of them was by HBO. So she walked into HBO, huge office, tall building. I want a job working as a grip producing live TV shows, and I'm here for that job. And guess what? They interviewed her on the spot.
On the spot.
4 interviews. She went from 8 o'clock in the morning till 5 o'clock that night, and at 5:30 they says, we're going to offer you a job in sales. Hmm. And she said, I don't think you heard me.
Right.
I didn't come here for sales. Hmm. I want to be a grip working behind the scenes producing TV shows. She shook and left, called her coach. What did I do? Hmm. No problem. We've got 3 more. Let's try them. Hmm. She goes down to a TV show called... It's a courtroom TV show, and walked in, same thing, and said, before you talk to me, I don't want to be interviewed for sales or marketing or anything else. I'm coming for that position. They hired her at 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Oh, that's fantastic.
She went and then put in her notice for 2 weeks. 3 days later, guess what happened? HBO called her up. We've changed our mind. We think we want to hire you as a grip. She says, you missed out. I'm working for courtroom TV. Really? They said, well, we know what they pay. We'll double it. She said, I don't think you understood. I want to go for them because they knew exactly what I wanted, and they matched me with the right position. They didn't try to change me. And it took her 3 months to go from assistant grip to grip, and then she was assistant manager 6 months later because she had no experience, none, not even a scintilla of experience. And she got it because she wanted it that bad.
And she was clear and focused in her communication as well. That's vital.
That's the key.
One thing I've noticed.
The takeaway is, like you said, the takeaway is if you know what you want, that assistant architect, go recruit the job. I guarantee you, the person who's got that job available, if someone comes in like Linda and says, I want it, and let me show you how great I'm at it, and your eyes light up when you talk about it, you're not faking it, it's genuine. The smart people will hire you on the spot, won't even let you leave. They'll get a handcuffs and handcuff you to the desk so you can't leave.
Well, listen, Bill, I want to challenge you here, kind of ask you a bit of a... Because what I noticed is between wanting something and getting it is this space called either uncertainty or where it takes courage to move past it. So how is it possible to move past or to actually have the courage to actually go after what you want?
Because once you know what you want, the fear of failure leaves.
That's a bold statement.
Well... Because, look at Lisa, she stayed with what she wanted, and she went on to the next option. And because she stayed on course, she got there.
So are you saying...
Look at Thomas Edison. 5,000 times, he tested filaments for the light bulb. He got it on the 5,100-something time.
So, Bill, what you're saying is that if you feel fear, you're not doing what you want?
Fear is a natural concern of rejection. Fear comes to all of us. I mean, I don't think I was clear. I'm saying if you know what you want, go after it. It's not going to be that easy. You're not just because you say, okay, I want it, I'm going to get it. But once you know what you want, it makes it easy for everybody else to either say, I can give it to you, or you don't. The difference between Linda and knowing what she wanted and why I hired her and the 17 people who came in before her was simple. She knew what she wanted, and I did too. The other 16 or 17 didn't know.
Okay.
So why should I hire somebody to come in to try to figure out if it could be, maybe, possibly they might like, could be like this job? That's the difference. It's knowing you want it that puts you so far above everybody else in the competition of getting hired that it's really unfair.
I believe that. I had a recent quote from an employer say that 70% of getting the position for my company is wanting it enough, and that kind of reflects your statement there.
And communicating right. That genuine, and you have to be genuine, because if Linda had tried to convince me that she wanted to work in the customer service, it wouldn't have taken me 3-4 nanoseconds to figure out that was not right.
It's not working. Bill, we're just a few minutes here left. I want to just quickly touch on this concept of true priorities. So what I notice in life for a lot of people that I deal with is that they have difficulty making choices, and it could be the choice of focusing on wanting to be a grip for, let's say, a television show. So you talk about setting boundaries based on your priorities, which dramatically reduce conflict. Can you, like, in a minute summarize what the heck that means?
Well, everybody has a series of priorities, and they change. They vary because when you finish one, you go to the next one. It's knowing your priorities that puts you in the power position to know which one's first. Right now, I know my priority is to talk to you, not to go out and play tennis. So I'm clean about it. Okay? That gives me the ability to focus on what I'm doing to fulfill that priority. There it is.
Okay. So it's
without conflict. I'm not. Someone said, hey, Bill, come on here and play some tennis. I'm sorry. I'm doing what I want to do.
Okay. Well, listen, I just want to mention here. So we're talking to Bill Deweese here, author of Go to Play Every Day and Call It Work. Bill, you sent me your book so that I could interview you. It's been a real joy. I've actually really enjoyed our conversation. I want you to tell the listener how they can get involved, get the book. How can they do that?
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. All they have to do is go to playeveryday.com.
Okay.
Go to playeveryday.com and look it up. They can